the Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. It is good to have you with us this morning. Sadly, we start the show with news that broke last night about 11:35 p.m. It was announced that Congressman John Lewis, the Democrat from Georgia, died Friday at the age of 80. He spent more than three decades in Congress. And John Gizzi has covered John Lewis through those three decades and covered Representative John Lewis before that. John Gizzi joins us this morning. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. And what a history for John Lewis in his life.
Certainly it was a history. This is someone who, friends pointed out, was the most beaten member of Congress, taking his lumps back in the 1950s. He defied his own father, who told him that's the way it was, when the young John questioned whites-only men's rooms and colored-only drinking fountains. And, of course, he went on to lead sit-ins in the South in the early 60s, became active in the fledgling civil rights movement, is featured in a poster showing a policeman bringing down a truncheon as he lies on the ground. And, of course, he addressed the civil rights march in Washington that featured the Reverend Martin Luther King. What's interesting about John Lewis is that he was primarily known as a civil rights figure, but by no means was the civil rights legend that he became and will be mourned as in the days ahead. By the 1970s and 80s, he was an established but still obscure Democratic politician. He served on the Atlanta City Council and in the Carter administration. And then in 1986, he ran for Congress in the majority black district that covered three-fourths of the city of Atlanta. Now, here's what's interesting at the time. John Lewis, known in the civil rights movement, but relatively obscure in the public, was a big underdog against the better-known and more charismatic state senator, Julian Bond. Bond was a political figure, someone who had gone all the way to the Supreme Court to ensure his own election to the Georgia legislature years before. It was Bond, the favorite of the national media and the political establishment in Atlanta, who was the big favorite. John Lewis was not. In fact, then-State Senator Bond nearly won the primary outright without a runoff. But when they went to the runoff, John Lewis demonstrated what a political scrapper he was. He did some hard-hitting mailings, and this came at a time that Bond's marriage was on the rocks, and wife Alice accused him of cocaine use. His supporters said that the Lewis campaign was amplifying the charges of cocaine use, something that Lewis himself denied. In the end, it came down to a close runoff, but the winner was John Lewis. Julian Bond became Mr. Yesterday and threw himself into television, narration of documentary films, but he was out of politics. John Lewis's career in Congress was just beginning. And within a short time, it was he who inherited the mantle of Mr. Civil Rights. And, of course, we'll hear the rest of the story in the days ahead. John Lewis, an important figure and a master politician himself.
Well, John, we'll talk to you again in the 7 o'clock hour, and I know you will have more reflections on the life and career of John Lewis. And again, if you're just joining us, Congressman John Lewis died yesterday at the age of 80. Thank you, John.
Thank you, and we'll be hearing a lot about John Lewis in the days ahead.
It's 6:13. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Time for a check of the traffic and weather, and Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Virginia, there is still some accident activity on 95 southbound, just north of US 1 in Woodbridge, exit 161. Right lane is blocked, so do watch out for that and watch out for a brief delay. Earlier accident on westbound 66 at the Fairfax County Parkway cleared away. Now keep in mind in Wheaton that there is some utility work that has Georgia Avenue closed northbound between University Boulevard and Blue Ridge Avenue. So do watch out for the posted detours. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Another very hot day ahead of us. High temperatures in the mid-90s. A few spots may even reach the upper 90s later today under mostly sunny skies. Mainly clear and muggy tonight. Lows in the 70s. For your Sunday, plenty of heat and humidity. Highs in the upper 90s under mostly sunny skies. The heat index values be closer to 105 degrees. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
77 degrees in the nation's capital. It's 614. It is a Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. Luke Broom's behind the console today. And we've got plenty to cover, and we will be talking with John Gizzi a little more about John Lewis's career. But also later on this morning, we're going to talk with John Gizzi about the primaries this week. You may have heard that Jeff Sessions lost in Alabama. But there were some other interesting moves in the primaries that will have an impact, obviously, on the fall elections. And we'll get into those with John Gizzi coming up a little bit later on this morning. And also when we're talking with John, we'll talk about the shakeup in the Trump campaign. Of course, Brad Parscale moving back to the digital department and Bill Stefkin coming in. So we'll talk with John about the impact on the campaign, what to expect from the new leadership. And we'll see how that plays out for the Trump campaign coming up. Also, when we talk with John Gizzi, we'll talk about Justin Amash. He's out, finally. He's been all over the road, was going to run for president, now he's not going to run for re-election. We'll find out why when we talk to John later on this morning. We're going to talk with Jim Trusty this morning. Of course, he's an attorney here in D.C. and the former head of the Organized Crime and Gang Unit at the Department of Justice. We're going to talk with Jim about the Ghislaine Maxwell arrest. She was denied bail earlier in the week. Of course, that in the Jeffrey Epstein investigation and what that means in terms of the investigation moving forward. There's been a lot of attention paid to crime in New York City. Mayor de Blasio's policy, the notion of defunding the police, deactivating the anti-crime unit on the street, the undercover unit. We'll talk with Jim about what's going on in New York. And another city that's having a lot of problems is Chicago. And we'll talk with Jim Trusty about what is going on in Chicago, the things that could be offered to these cities by the Justice Department and the federal government that they are not taking advantage of. And there was a big announcement this week in terms of a crackdown on MS-13, and we'll get Jim's read on that as well coming up within this hour. Jennifer Harper will join us a little bit later on in this half hour as well, and she's got some interesting information on something that could be a hidden boost for Trump that is being talked about in Washington as it could relate to the fall presidential election. New legislation on protecting monuments. She's got a story on that as relates to Kevin McCarthy and the House of Representatives. And interesting business component to the legalization of marijuana, a discussion going on in the state of New Jersey about that. And we'll be chatting with Jennifer Harper about that as well. And one business that is doing very, very well during COVID-19. And we're going to be talking with Jennifer as well on that topic this morning. KT McFarland will join us later on. President Trump putting the hammer down on China. And we'll get KT's read on that. And we'll be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. And Tony's got some interesting insight on that Twitter hack this week. Also, things going on in Iran and things going on with the DHS and some of their activities in Seattle, how Democrats are using intelligence tools to destabilize the campaigns. And we'll talk about that with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up this morning. So we certainly have plenty to cover. A lot of local debate about the Redskins' name, what it will be. Interesting that you probably heard there was a guy trademarked a lot of the great names that the Redskins could have been. There's this just average guy holding the trademarks. So that could be part of the delay if they're interested in using any of those names. And then, of course, you heard the allegations as reported by the Washington Post by 15 female employees and former employees of the Redskins and their allegations about sexual harassment. We saw Larry Michael, the voice of the Redskins, leaving this week. So a lot of turmoil in the Washington football organization, and that will be unfolding in the weeks ahead. Obviously, we have the turmoil with COVID-19, the big debate on schools, going back to schools in the fall. Go back 5 days a week, go back 2 days a week, or online learning for the remainder of the school year. Big debate, and something obviously you're going to be hearing a lot more about on WMAL in the weeks ahead. As that discussion continues, both on the local level and also on a national level. A couple of news stories we're following, and I should say it is 6:20, and we have people joining us from time to time during the show. So if you might be just joining us in the past few minutes, I do want to report that Congressman John Lewis has been fighting pancreatic cancer. He lost that battle yesterday. It was announced late last night that he died at the age of 80, and we will have more on the civil rights icon when we talk with John Gizzi coming up about 7:05 this morning. One story breaking last night in Chicago, the Chicago police clashing with protesters near the statue of Christopher Columbus in Grant Park in Chicago. Police deployed pepper spray on crowds that were attempting to pull down the statue. The crowd eventually dispersing from the area, but protesters were seen throwing bottles and full soda cans at the police. Some shot off fireworks. Multiple officers, as many as 18, reportedly injured. Some treated at the scene. Chicago Fire Department was reporting that at least 4 members of the crowd were also injured. They were taken to a hospital in good condition. Several arrested at the scene. It all started about 5 o'clock at the Buckingham Fountain in Chicago's Grant Park, the Columbus statue. It was a Black Lives Matter demonstration, started around 5 o'clock. The crowd tying 2 ropes to the statue, attempting to pull it down. It was a couple of hundred people in that crowd. The police tactical units then arrived. They deployed the pepper spray. Several people, both protesters and police, overcome by the chemical. Police still on the scene early this morning. The statue remaining upright. And even Mayor Lori Lightfoot has said that that statue should stay. So good to see the Chicago authorities taking action to protect that Columbus statue in Chicago. Well, a lot of controversy here in this country, but a lot of controversy in the UK. Really interesting story out of there yesterday. It's on the social side, but it's really something. Now, the first royal wedding in Great Britain behind closed doors for 235 years took place. Only the inner circle, the family's inner circle, knew. It was the first secret royal wedding, again, in 235 years. Who was it? Well, it was Prince Beatrice marrying Eduardo Mazzi. Prince Andrew attended the ceremony at the All Saints Royal Chapel in Windsor. But the media and people in general are blaming the prince for the fact that it had to be held in secret and that it was a private ceremony. They had a much bigger wedding planned for May. It was canceled. Prince Andrew did walk his daughter down the aisle in the secret royal wedding. As the reports come out of the UK, this is one of the stories, the disgraced royal put his troubles over the Jeffrey Epstein scandal to one side to give the princess away in a remarkable private ceremony. The clandestine nature of the hastily arranged nuptials meant the Queen's beleaguered son was spared appearing in public. There were only 15 family and friends at the royal wedding in the UK. Her grandparents are the Queen and Duke of Edinburgh. They were the only royals present besides Beatrice and her immediate family, including her mother, who is Sarah, the Duchess of York, and her younger sister, Princess Eugenie, and, of course, Prince Andrew. Wow. A lot of controversy in the UK over that one. Big surprise to everybody because it was held in secret. And a lot of talk about that around Europe this morning. It's 6:23. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
America is a great big country.
Filled with all kinds of different people.
And we all count.
That's why the 2020 Census
wants to make sure we're all counted.
Why is it so important?
Because the census helps inform how hundreds of billions of dollars will be spent each year for things like
new roads,
health clinics,
even more school programs.
So make sure you're counted.
Because you count.
Shape your future. Start here. Complete the census at 2020census.gov. Paid for by U.S. Census Bureau.
Businesses are starting to bounce back. But what if you could do better than that? What if you could adapt, deliver, and succeed in new ways with new customers? At Comcast Business, we're committed to helping you not just bounce back, but bounce forward. That's why we're offering a powerful and reliable internet solution now for only $69.99 a month for 24 months with a 3-year agreement. Plus, get free installation when you order online. It'll help you stay ahead with a network you can count on. Stay connected with 24/7 support and thrive with flexible solutions that work wherever you are. Call 1-800-501-6000 or go online today to find out more. Comcast Business. Offer ends 8/9/2020. Restrictions apply. New customers only with 100 megabits internet. Free install offer applies to one outlet. Early termination fee applies. Equipment installation taxes and fees extra. Subject to change.
It's a great time to get a great deal on a new car when you get approved for an auto loan from PenFed. Our Powered by True Car rates are as low as 1.39% APR on new vehicles. Finance for a longer term to lower your monthly bill. Plus, take up to 60 days to schedule your first payment. Join PenFed, and together, we'll keep you moving forward. Anyone can apply. Visit PenFed.org/auto or call 1-800-247-5626. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Come summer in Old Bay and enjoy breathtaking views of blue skies, grass overtaken by weeds, and your neighbor taking the trash out shirtless. Sip an Old Bay Bloody Mary as you relax in a lawn chair overlooking the kiddie pool and the trampoline. And savor Old Bay steamed shrimp as you take in the calm, tranquil sound of your husband going to town with the weed whacker. Old Bay, you don't just like it.
Don't miss the Trading Group Show, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WMAL. Learn how you can earn a full-time income as a short-term trader. That's the Trading Group Show, Saturdays at 3 p.m. The question line is 888-646-8787.
And as we've been mentioning, Congressman John Lewis passed away yesterday. It was announced late last night. And we'll talk further about the real history and life of John Lewis, a fascinating history going back to his youth and his participation in the civil rights movement from the Pettus Bridge to the Lincoln Memorial with Dr. King and his over three decades in the United States Congress. And again, we'll have a lot more insight into Congressman John Lewis coming up with John Gizzi about 7:05 this morning. Also in the news this morning, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court Justice, has announced that she is receiving chemotherapy for a recurrence of cancer. She says she has no plans to retire from the Supreme Court. She is now 87 years old. She says her treatment so far has succeeded in reducing lesions on her liver and that she will continue chemotherapy sessions every 2 weeks to keep her cancer at bay. She spent time in the hospital this week for a possible infection, but Ginsburg said it was unrelated to the cancer. Her departure from the court before the election could give President Trump the chance to shift the court more to the right. Joe Biden says he's begun receiving intelligence briefings as he warns that Russia, China, and other adversaries are attempting to undermine the upcoming U.S. elections in November. The presumptive Democratic presidential nominee was not specific. He offered no evidence while addressing a virtual fundraiser on Friday. But in the process, he did confirm that he's receiving classified briefings after suggesting as recently as late last month that he wasn't getting them. Biden receiving intelligence briefings while the vice president, of course, but he told reporters he wasn't getting them as of June 30th. Classified briefings are traditionally provided to major party nominees once they win the primary, but Biden will not formally become the nominee until the party's convention next month. We got one more story, then we'll catch the traffic and weather. And the mayor of Portland is demanding that President Trump remove militarized federal agents that the president deployed to the city after some detained people on the streets distant from the federal property they're sent to protect. Now, the federal authorities are in there to protect the federal courthouse and other federal property. The governor said Trump is looking for a confrontation in hopes of winning political points elsewhere. If you were to see the graffiti all over the courthouse, you might view it differently. It is 6:30. It's time for a check of the traffic and weather, and Michelle Murray is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Virginia, looks like that earlier accident on 95 southbound, just north of Route 1 in Woodbridge, has been moved over to the shoulder. No more delays there to worry about. On 395 northbound between the Beltway and Etz Road, you will find some right lane construction. But again, that is not causing any delays. In Maryland, in the Wheaton area on Georgia Avenue northbound, that is closed between Blue Ridge Avenue and Reedy Drive due to a utility problem. So do keep that in mind. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Another very hot day ahead of us. High temperatures in the mid-90s. A few spots may even reach the upper 90s later today under mostly sunny skies. Mainly clear and muggy tonight. Lows in the 70s. For your Sunday, plenty of heat and humidity. Highs in the upper 90s under mostly sunny skies. The heat index values be closer to 105 degrees. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 77 degrees in the nation's capital at 6:30.
Sometimes you take a vacation.
Yeah.
And the happiest part is when you get back home.
Home sweet home.
People are putting time and energy and money into their homes right now.
There's no better place to put it.
And as a result of all that effort.
Yes.
A lot of junk needs to disappear.
Oh, I know the answer to this one.
Okay.
Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
We make junk disappear.
All you have to do is point.
Yard junk.
Attic junk.
Closet junk.
Garage junk.
Storage shed junk.
Even under the bed junk.
All you have to do is point.
Your house is going to love you more than ever.
And you're going to feel happier too.
You won't just be saying home sweet home anymore.
You'll be saying extremely very sweet.
Big, open, spacious.
Sparkling, junk free home.
Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
Or visit 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Have you met a true hero lately? Hi, it's Jonathan Cotton with the Good Feet Store, and I've been thinking about heroes that I work with. Take Reese, for example, one of our store managers. Reese served in Afghanistan and sustained significant injuries when his MRAP vehicle was disabled by an IED. He was told he would never walk without a cane. However, after he was fitted with Good Feet arch supports, he was able to walk without a limp and without a cane. His service as a manager is exemplary, and we are proud to have Reese on the Good Feet team. The story doesn't stop there, though. Reese fell in love and got married to a beautiful nurse named Erica. And during this pandemic, who was on the front lines taking care of COVID-19 patients? You guessed it, Erica. Heroes tend to stick together. The Good Feet Store says thank you to all of our heroes. We especially say thank you to the heroes among us, such as Reese and Erica, for the many ways they have served us all. Come by the Good Feet Store and see what Good Feet Arch Supports can do for you. You never know. You might bump into a hero.
Picture this. A shortage of fuel has closed your electric utility, or any other possible disaster devastated your town. You're out of power. No lights. No news. That's why federal and state agencies urge you to have an emergency radio. Now you can get a free Dynamo World Band emergency radio. This powerful radio lets you stay informed during any type of emergency. It doesn't even need batteries. It comes with a hand crank generator and super bright LED flashlight. The Dynamo emergency radio includes the NOAA weather band, a long range AM receiver, a high sensitivity FM band, and even a USB jack to charge cell phones or other devices. The Dynamo emergency weather band radio retails for almost $30, but Newsmax wants to make sure you get this radio. So check out the free offer for the emergency radio by going to gettheradio.com. That's gettheradio.com. Or call toll-free 877-NEWSMAX. That's 877-NEWSMAX. This radio could save your life. This offer may end soon, so order today.
Hi, it's Larry O'Connor for Sarah and Debbie Reynolds, the Reynolds team with Keller Williams Realty. A lot of those big cash offer companies have stopped providing cash offers for homes. But if you need to sell right now, here's what I recommend. Get a 24-hour cash offer from the Reynolds team. Friends, Sarah and Debbie Reynolds have always helped you sell faster and for top dollar, and now they'll give you a competitive cash offer for your home in just 24 hours. No showings and no repairs necessary. The Reynolds team gives you the power to sell now or on your schedule with their COVID-19 Seller Protection Program that markets your home online to over 10,000 ready buyers, featuring virtual tours, offers, and closings, all in your time frame and without in-person interaction. And if your home doesn't sell, Sarah and Debbie Reynolds will buy it, guaranteed. In writing, the COVID-19 Seller Protection Program gives you peace of mind while their 24-hour cash offer gets your home sold immediately. Call the Reynolds team at 844-344-SOLD, 844-344-SOLD, or at DebbieHasTheBuyers.com.
It's a hot summer weekend here on the Saturday Morning Update, and we have Jennifer Harper to join us from the Washington Times, and she writes the Inside the Beltway column. It is good to have you with us, Jennifer. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Rick.
There have been rumblings around town about the possibility of a third summit with Kim Jong-un of North Korea prior to the election. Mike Pompeo playing it down this week, but are you hearing something else?
There's been a lot of talk about that this week, and certainly some of it came out of the State Department. But I have some information from Harry Kazianis, and he is a contributor to the American Conservative, always an interesting publication. He's also a Korea expert over there at the Center for the National Interest. This is what he has to say. Multiple senior White House aides have confirmed that the Trump administration is now considering new proposals to achieve what the White House hopes would be a breakthrough in what are the now long dormant talks with North Korea. If a deal can be struck, the hope is that the agreement would be signed in a potential third summit this fall in an Asian capital within train or flying distance of Pyongyang. Interesting details. You know, it made me think about the very first summit that the gentleman had, and that was on June 12, 2018. You have to remember there were 3,000 journalists there, Rick, from 40 different countries. It was a big deal. Everybody felt really good, and the second meeting was, nah, not so great. But the significance about this particular meeting, if it does happen, certainly I would agree with Mr. Kazianis, is that it would be a great boon for the president's reelection campaign. And essentially, according to his sources there at the White House, the approach looks very practical, and it seems like the White House would halt some of these sanctions against North Korea in exchange for concessions in that nuclear weapons program. And a White House source told Mr. Kazianis, we just need to know what North Korea is looking for. And another analyst told him that ending the Korean War not only helps President Trump achieve a historic milestone, but it's something that if the timing is right, say in October, it allows us a win that Democrats would have a hard time blunting. How do you run against peace? You can't without looking like a sore loser or jealous. So it's something to watch, an interesting situation that's evolving on a faraway shore. Let's just put it that way.
Certainly a lot of discussion in the news about statues and vandalism and what can be done about it. And there is a Republican who's going to take a shot at it in the House.
Well, certainly the White House has spoken out very strongly about this with President Trump's proposals for serious jail time for those that do damage our historic monuments and statuary. But this week, House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy has introduced the Protect America Statue Act of 2020. And guess what it would do? It would bar state and local entities that do not protect historic monuments from receiving federal grants. Well, that's hardball, isn't it? Anyway, he says, Mr. McCarthy said in the statement, public monuments are indispensable because they tell the American story. It is wrong to erase our history. We should be learning from it. Instead, left-wing mobs and cities across the country are destroying statues, and this is lawlessness in its purest and most unacceptable form. This is, again, coming from House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy. And he says, yet too many liberal mayors and governors will not restore order or arrest the rioters. Many seem to agree with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who excused mob rule as people will do what they do. as if that absolves them of their failure to follow the law. So, again, Kevin McCarthy says if state and local officials will not protect historic monuments, then Congress must and will. My legislation has real consequences for states and cities. No order, no funding. It is time to respect our laws, protect our history, and punish the statue smashers. Again, that's coming from Kevin McCarthy. Interesting moment this week.
First Lady Melania Trump has never gotten a fair shake in the media, even prior to becoming the First Lady. What is the latest incident of the tacky media treatment?
Yes, this is just distressing and tacky and lots more. But the fashion magazines, they appear to have a ban on featuring First Lady Melania Trump. And this came to the attention of a number of publications that In Style magazine is this week featuring Dr. Anthony Fauci. And he's wearing sunglasses and sitting poolside and sharing his thoughts and so forth and so on. So a lot of people were wondering, why isn't Mrs. Trump in Style? And you have to remember, you know, she has championed multiple social and cultural causes. She's represented the United States on a global scale with lots of style and lots of just very proper ways about her. And she has not received similar treatment. And here's just one account. This is coming from Amanda Prestia Giacomo, and she is a staff writer for the Daily Writer. She says, First Lady Melania Trump, a former fashion model, has yet to be featured for In Style since becoming First Lady, in stark contrast to her predecessor, former First Lady Michelle Obama, and apparently even Dr. Fauci. She points out that Mrs. Obama was featured on a dozen major magazine covers, including three appearances on the cover of Vogue. And according to Jenna Ellis, she is a senior legal advisor for Team Trump. She says, yet Melania is still waiting. And this is not the first time this has happened. I mean, even President Trump, he appeared very irritated at one point, according to the Daily Wire account. They said that President Trump seemed irritated by the media's treatment of his wife and suggested that Melania would be fawned over like former First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis if she had been a Democrat. So that situation is going on, and this week I featured that particular controversy with Mrs. Trump's official photo. And if you've never seen it, it's at the White House website, and you can see that she really is just super classy, very beautiful, and looks very calm in that picture. So it's kind of their loss if they don't feature her.
Well, there was a time when the business of marijuana was cash for a bag. That's different, and it impacts taxes, it impacts states, it impacts business. And you've got an interesting story on it this week in the column.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you what, Rick, this business has come a long way from the old hippies of yesterday. Remember, they used to peddle their, quote, pot on the streets. And the sales of legal marijuana, and they're talking about recreational and medical use, adult use, and this is coming from Marijuana Business Daily. This is an actual industry publication. They have published something called the Marijuana Business Factbook, and they say that the revenue, $13 billion in 2019. How about that? These are sales of legal adult use and medical cannabis in the United States, and they are topping spending on sleep aids, hard seltzer, and toothpaste combined. Interesting parallel there. And they also say that the total marijuana sales now exceed the NBA's annual U.S. revenue, and by 2024 could surpass Americans' annual spending on craft beer. And they also note that Americans spent $3 billion on toothpaste last year. But they're predicting that sales will hit $37 billion in the next 3 years. And according to Eli McVeigh, he's the research editor for all this, he says this data underscores the fact that the U.S. cannabis industry, interesting term, is already a major economic force, even though it has yet to reach its full potential. And certainly a lot of governors, mayors, and so forth are eyeing this as a way out. And this week I looked at New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. And this week he's calling for legalizing marijuana in his own kind of cash-strapped state. He called it an incredibly smart thing to do. And his comment was, we're not inventing marijuana. It exists. Anyway, the potential tax revenue for the state, they figured, if it gets legalized up there, is $300 million a year. So you can see why the Garden State is wondering about that. And that was according to the New Jersey Policy Perspective, which is a think tank. And certainly there are a lot of polls out there that are indicating that 6 in 10 New Jersey voters said they would vote for marijuana legislation. But it also points out that the state has a lot of red tape up there, so it would take quite a while. But anyway, that's an update on a kind of always interesting business phenomenon.
Many businesses have taken a hit, of course, due to the coronavirus, but there are some that have done well. And you've got a story on one that's done very well.
Oh, boy, and my question to everybody this morning is, have you read anything lately? Are you curled up with a good book? Because if you are, you're not alone, because the coronavirus pandemic has sparked a huge book boom in the United States, and we're not talking about online books or anything like that. These are actual books, like you pick them up and you read them and enjoy them. And 322.1 million books have been sold since January, just in the past 6 months. And leading the pack here are escapist fiction, how-to guides and do-it-yourself guides, and all the homeschooling materials for moms, dads, stepmoms, and everyone else who have had to take care of their kids at home. And according to, it's all according to BookScan. That's a major industry source. And it says that after posting soft sales for the past several years, the adult fiction category has a 3% increase in the first 6 months of 2020. This is coming from Publishers Weekly. And booksellers are now reporting that more people are looking for titles that provide an escape from the drumbeat of coronavirus news. And leading this big surge is graphic novels, general fiction. The sales here are up by 10%. Hobby craft and cookbooks were up by 31%. And juvenile nonfiction is up by 25.5%. And the leader in this category was My First Learn to Write Workbook, which sold almost 400,000 copies, and it is now in the national top 10. How about that for an $8.99 book? Is now in ninth place on the overall bestseller list for the first 6 months of the year. And this is, again, coming from Publishers Weekly. And just to reassure everybody who likes the old classics, Publishers Weekly said there's been a huge jump in sales for classic children's books. So everything's not all bad this morning.
That's Jennifer Harper. Inside the Beltway, Washington Times is where you can follow her. Also, check her out on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Jennifer, thank you as always.
It's my pleasure. Have a good day, everybody.
6:46, the Saturday morning update. We'll talk to Jim Trusty next. Time now for a check of the traffic and weather. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In the district, getting reports of an accident on DC 295 southbound, right near Pennsylvania Avenue. Use caution there. Also, do keep in mind that on University Boulevard, that has closed both east and westbound between Elkins Street and Grandview Avenue. All three lanes are closed due to police activity. On the westbound side, the two left lanes are closed on the eastbound side. Also, do keep in mind that in Wheaton, Georgia Avenue, both north and southbound between University Boulevard and Blue Ridge Avenue, the roadway is reduced to one lane due to a utility problem. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, after a very hot end of the week, more heat and humidity is expected this weekend. Plenty of sunshine today, but high temperatures in the mid-90s. I'd say not quite as humid today with the dew points back in the 60s, but things will change overnight. The mugginess will return, mainly clear, lows in the 70s. As we go towards your Sunday, plenty of sunshine, hot and humid, highs in the upper 90s. It will feel like closer to 105 degrees. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
77 degrees, 6:47 on the Saturday morning update. Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. It is great to be joined by Jim Trusty. He is an attorney with IFRA Law here in Washington, and he had a long stint as the chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. And, Jim, it is always good to get your perspectives and help us out on all of the developments in these legal stories. And I want to start off with Ghislaine Maxwell. Of course, she ended up in court, the close associate of Jeffrey Epstein and the alleged facilitator of many of his crimes against minors. She was hoping for bail. The prosecutor said she was a flight risk. Her bail was denied. She remains in jail.
Yeah, I mean, federal detention is always going to be based on one of two things. It's either the risk of flight or being a danger to the community. And a lot of people were kind of up in arms that the government wasn't talking about her being a danger to the community. But you have to remember the specific charges are something from the mid-90s, I mean, 25 years old. So it would have been very uphill for the government to argue danger to the community. What's interesting to me is when they started the arguments in terms of the pleadings, the government was talking about her reaction to the arrest team coming to her house, and they made a lot of hay out of the fact that she ran from one room to another and that she had tinfoil on her cell phone, and it was almost kind of borderline comical, and it seemed very very light to say that this was posing a risk of flight. But by the time the hearing was over, it was clear that Ms. Maxwell had three passports. She had an entirely fake identity. She obviously had millions of dollars to play with. And so it became a much more compelling case for the judge and an easier case for the judge to decide that there was a substantial risk of flight here.
With the severity of the alleged crimes that Jeffrey Epstein committed and the number of women who have come forward, will Ghislaine Maxwell ultimately end up getting the brunt of what Epstein should have gotten?
Well, she certainly might. I mean, if her case goes to trial and she's convicted, you know, she'll be looking at pretty astronomical numbers. And from all the public accounts that are out there so far, it sounds like, you know, if Epstein is one, she's 1A. I mean, this was not something where she was far down the ladder from him. She was a active participant in human trafficking for years and abusing young women, not even just setting it up, but participating in it. So there's a lot of hell to pay in terms of what she's charged with and what could happen. I think what's going to be interesting going forward is the possibility of cooperation. You know, she'll feel the pressure much more acutely now being locked up for the first time in her life. And if she cooperates, and I have to say, it sounds like she has plenty she could offer the prosecution, that's going to be her best way of modifying what could be a real serious sentence if she goes to trial and loses.
I want to turn to the mess in New York City between the mayor, Bill de Blasio, and the police department. And we saw a protest on the Brooklyn Bridge. A 24-year-old female was arrested in connection with the attack on the officers. It left three officers injured. And in one case, CNN reports that a lieutenant suffered an orbital fracture to one of his eyes, and another sergeant sustained a laceration to the head that required eight staples. The 24-year-old suspect was released without bail. What is going on in New York City?
Well, it's a horrible combination of things. I think ultimately, you know, you have to hold de Blasio accountable at the end of the day. I mean, the mayor has set a tone in that city that is leading to destruction. And, you know, he seems to be a little oblivious to it or apathetic about it. But I think a lot of people living in New York are living in fear. The images of these police officers being beaten and bloodied is just horrific. I mean, the lawlessness has got to grab most normal citizens by the lapels and tells you something severely wrong is happening in New York. But, you know, I go back to what we used to refer to as the broken windows approach to law enforcement. You know, the idea behind the broken windows policy or doctrine was that if something happened in a neighborhood, even if it was very small, you immediately jumped on it. You not only did it say, go arrest the guy that threw the rock that broke the window, but fix the window, fix the vandalism, fix the graffiti. And what it did is it created a culture of expectations, of respect for law enforcement, and an idea that, you know, this culture is going to respect a very responsive law enforcement community. I think what we're seeing now is the kind of reverse corollary to that, the reverse broken windows, which is know, you've got a mayor that says things like, well, we're going to have a curfew, then doesn't enforce it, or says, you know, don't go break the laws, but has his police stand by while statues are toppled. And as the statues become toppled with impunity, people realize, well, maybe we can set fires, or we can pour acid on statues, or we can assault people that we don't like. And you've seen this graduation from technical or petty crimes through property crimes through violent offenses, and all the numbers show it's on the rise. And what again, I don't excuse the actual criminals themselves, but the leadership makes a huge difference. And NYPD feels like they have no support from this mayor. The mayor doesn't seem to care to change that opinion. The people that are prone to committing crimes out on the streets right now are picking up on that vacuum, and I just don't see it changing soon. And I mean, that's kind of the horrific part, is I see a downward trajectory of the standard of life in New York that's going to continue.
So we've seen gun violence in major cities across the country. I mean, children, a one-year-old murdered in New York. We've seen children killed in Chicago. And there was a dust-up between the White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany and Mayor Lori Lightfoot of Chicago. They've gotten into it in the past 24 hours with tweets, McEnany calling her derelict, and Lori Lightfoot referring to her as a Karen. Wow. Question, though, Jim. The president has offered federal resources to help in these major cities. The Democratic mayors refusing that help. And as you look at it from your perspective, having been at the Department of Justice, how does this all strike you?
Well, incredibly frustrating. I mean, you know, the fact that this mayor has time to go out and make snarky tweets instead of worrying about the funerals that are popping up around her city is really frustrating. But I go back to my days at DOJ a little bit and kind of think about the federal component of this. It seems to me that the mayor is just knee-jerk opposed to federal assistance because Donald Trump's involved. I mean, again, if you're a representative of the people of that city, I think you have to crawl out of that kind of narrow focus and stop worrying about, you know, the bad orange man and actually do something that's good for your city. So going back to when I was at DOJ, you know, we were trying to address it as best we could, but it was really from the outside. There was kind of an interesting allergy to federal assistance within the federal prosecution or the U.S. Attorney's Office up in Chicago. And there's a lot of great people there, and I was friends with some, but there was just this kind of knee-jerk reluctance to involve Washington. And they weren't alone, but that was just a particularly bad sign in terms of ever hammering out big cases against the worst gangs. Now, we did some cases out of Northwest Indiana where they had a very friendly U.S. attorney who was happy to partner with Maine Justice, and we did a good number of gang RICO cases, often with defendants who operated out of Chicago. So we kind of did what we could from the suburbs. By about 2016 or 17, the U.S. Attorney's Office restructured, created a more vibrant gang unit. And I know they did at least a couple of RICO cases against some really bad groups, but I still haven't seen any kind of sustained federal presence over time when it comes to, you know, really comprehensive prosecutions. I know the state set up their own RICO statute, and the problem with that is it had a sunset clause. Like, I guess their legislature, you know, wanted to dip their toes in the water but not necessarily swim. So they gave the prosecutors a year to build RICO cases, and then the law was going to go extinct. I mean, it was just a crazy fuse. And I don't know where it's gone from there, but I know it pretty much doomed it from the start. There was not, you know, a sea change of state RICO prosecutions based on the introduction of that law. So, again, I know there's law enforcement professionals up there that are tearing their hair out wondering, how do we, you know, get the green light to do more, to go after the guns, to go after the drugs, to protect witnesses, and to build big RICO cases. But for whatever reason, the culture for a long time, and particularly under this mayor, seems to be against that type of help.
I think the impression we get is that if the feds were to come in and help, that they would be sending in Humvees and the military. What you're talking about is help from the Justice Department in terms of prosecutions and investigations.
Right. I think in the long run, that's going to be more important than kind of the short run street security. Sure, it could be helpful to have a National Guard or to have DHS or, you know, whoever come out and bolster the thinning police ranks in Chicago. just for pure street security, that makes some sense. But long run, I think you have to focus on both root causes, which is deeper than, you know, any of us could ever go in a 1 or 2 hour show, but also prosecution techniques and policies. And that seems to be, from what I can see, lacking in Chicago.
Why would any mayor in their right mind turn down the assistance of U.S. attorneys and Department of Justice prosecutions when they have murder rates going through the roof? Let's turn to MS-13, because there was a major announcement this week on Wednesday. Justice Department said it was stepping up a crackdown on the international criminal gang known as MS-13 and would seek the death penalty against an alleged New York gang leader who was facing murder charges. Also said it would bring terrorism-related charges against an MS-13 member for the first time. Now, as we mentioned when we introduced you, Jim, you were the chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice, so you certainly know about this story. What can you tell us?
Well, you're right. I kind of lived and breathed MS-13 for a while, really when I was at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Maryland, which was in the mid-2000s, all the way through about 2016 when I had a death penalty trial against one of the MS-13 leaders. So that was bread and butter in the organized crime and gang section. And you know, my view is they really are kind of the modern-day mafia. They really pose a significant threat to the safety of citizens all across this country. When we first started doing indictments of MS-13 under the RICO statutes, we would put introductory language in there talking about how they're in at least 10 states across the United States, and we'd rattle off the states. By the time we finished, we basically were concluding with, they're in every state across the United States. They spread like a cancer across this country, and they are extremely violent. They treasure violence over almost anything else. It's all about turf and controlling their territory. And I guess the thing I point to is they have a mantra of rape, kill, and control. And it really says it all. I mean, those were the cases we were putting together as RICO cases. They all involve things like gang rape, multiple murders, intimidating witnesses, taking over territory from rival gangs. So, you know, I feel very strongly that this is a group that deserves significant attention really across all of government. I know they put a point man in who is a prosecutor from Eastern District of New York named John Durham. That name might be familiar to you because this is John Durham Jr. But John's been doing MS-13 cases up at Long Island, which has been really besieged by the gang. And I like the thought that they're going to go after leaders. I mean, that's the bottom guys. Even if they're horribly violent and do terrible things, they're replaceable, you know. And so there are murderers that deserve to be part of a RICO case, to be sure. But they're going to be replaced pretty quickly. And so if you're ever going to make a difference with MS-13, and I think this administration seems to get that, you really have to coordinate with El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, and pull up the guys that are calling the shots from overloaded prisons in Central America and hold them accountable under a system that's going to get them convicted.
Jim Trustee at IFRA Law here in D.C. Jim, thank you very much. We've got the 7 o'clock news coming up next. Then we're back with K.T. McFarland. We'll have John Gizzi and Tony Schaefer. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.